Today's Shia is Masecht and Dorm Daf Chav Zayin. We're going to begin on Daf Chav Vav Amud Beis, three lines from the bottom, Esvei Ravina Larava. To review, we learned in the Mishnah two shiurim ago, the Mishnah introduced to us the concept of Neder Shutta Mekhtasa Huta Kula. If a Neder is partially annulled, it, according to Bekiva, is completely annulled. Bekiva Beis Hillel. We had in the previous year a machlokes of Rabba and Rava how to apply that concept. Rava said, he had a stricter interpretation, that if the wording of the neder was not changed, no one will apply the concept of neder shotu mekhtasa to kulay. If the wording of the neder was changed, there we say only according to Akiva, neder shotu mekhtasa to kulay. Rava had a more lenient interpretation, and he said that if the wording of the neder was changed, everybody will apply the concept of neder shotu mekhtasa hutu kulay. If the neder was not changed, if the wording wasn't changed, then only according to Bekiva will we apply the concept of neder shotu mekhtasa hutu kulay. The last piece of Gemara we learned in the previous year was when somebody made a neder that he's not going to eat onions because he has a heart condition, and then he becomes aware that Kufri onions are good for people with a heart condition. So the Gemara said that even Rav Meir, who presumably holds like Beis Shammai, as we learned in the previous year, will agree that we say Neder Shotu Mekhtasa Hutu Kulay. And the Gemara assumed that Rav Meir was even referring to a situation where he didn't change his wording. So how could Rav Meir say that according to Rava? And as we said, according to Rava, the question was even more difficult, because according to Rava, no one says Neder Shotu Mekhtasa Hutu Kulay if the wording wasn't changed. So the Gemara says that the Braisa that quotes Rav Meir is referring to a situation where the wording was changed. Now the Gemara asks another question. Esei Ravina L'Rava, Rav Nosson Oimer, Rav Nosson teaches us, Yesh Neder Shotu Mekhtasa Mutar Mekhtasa Aster. There's a Neder that's partially annulled and partially not annulled. Kate said, Nodam in a kalkola, if there's a basket of fruit and somebody made a neder that he's not going to eat anything from that basket, because he felt that the fruit in the basket is not good fruit, he doesn't want to eat it, and then it turns out in the basket there are these figs, which are the b'nai shuach figs, which are very good figs. The Rishonim, we're not going to dwell on this, Rishonim go into an issue. Here Al Gemara says that B'nai Suach are good figs. Throughout Shas, it's not that clear if B'nai Suach are considered good figs or not. So many Rishonim say there are different types of B'nai Suach figs. Some are better, some are worse. Other Rishonim say that it should not be called B'nai Suach, it should be called B'nai Sheva, which is certainly a very high quality fig. Why is it called B'nai Sheva? So I saw two pshatim in the Rishonim. One pshat is that we know in a Shemitah year, whatever grows in the Shemitah year, you're not allowed to eat if it was not done under proper halachic supervision. But the halacha is, interestingly, regarding these fruit, if they come out in the seventh year, they're not picked for another 3 years, till the ninth year. They're picked only 3 years after they grow. So the Shemitah b'nai sheva figs only become usr because that's when they become available in the ninth year. So that's why they're very unique. They're Shemitah Halacha. That's why they're called B'nai Sheva. Another pshat, very interesting pshat, is that the Gemara says that the fruit that Adam HaRishon ate from the Eitz Hadas was this B'nai Sheva, this fig, this Taina. And we know that as a result of Adam HaRishon eating from the Eitz Hadas, death was brought to the world. So B'nai Sheva represents Shiva. Because of this fruit, there is now in the world a concept of people unfortunately sitting Shiva when they lose a relative. Other Rishonim say Suach means like to cause a stumbling. And this is where the first Aveira, the first place where somebody stumbled, happened because of this fruit. So somebody made a neder that he's not going to eat the fruit in this basket. And it turns out that in the basket there is this B'nai Suach fruit. And the person says, V'ama ili ha'yisi yodeya, had I been aware, she'b'nai suach b'toicha, that there was b'nai suach fruit in this basket, lo'y ha'yisi noider, I would have never made this neder. And as the Rishonim point out, This case is different than the case that we learned in the previous year, in the last case that we mentioned at the beginning of our year. In that case, the person, when he made the neder, he intended to prohibit all onions. But he said he's doing it because he has a heart condition. And then he becomes aware that the kufri onions are good for someone with a heart condition, so therefore it's not included. In our Gemara, the person, it was a very different situation. He always knew that b'nai suach fruit is a good fruit. And he never intended to prohibit himself from b'nai suach fruit. Just he didn't think there was b'nai suach fruit in this basket, when actually there was. Vama. Had I been aware that b'nai suach fruit is here, la'yisa neider. So the Tanakhama says, ha'kakala asura, all the fruits in the basket are asur, b'nai suach mutaris. So b'nai suach fruit may be eaten. Achabar b'kiva v'limit, comes a b'kiva and teaches us, neder shot m'ktasai, hotakulai. That if the b'nai suach fruit, if the neder is partially annulled, it's completely annulled. My laugh, isn't this a situation, d'ami ila ha'yisa yedei sh'b'nai suach b'taychai, if I would have been aware, Hayisi Omer, I would have said, Tainim Shcheres Ulevenis Hi, only the black and white Tainim Ha'asur, the B'nai Suach Mutaris. And the B'nai Suach I want to eat. So he would have changed his terminology. Yet what does the Brisa say? That even in a case of changed terminology, the only one that's Mekel, Rebbe Kiva Hi, it's only Rebbe Kiva. And Rabbonin, Obligi Rabbanan. The Rabbanan are disagreeing. Ask the Gemara, according to Rava, if the terminology is changed, if the wording is changed, it's not only Rabbi Kiva who says, Neder Shuta Mektasa Huta Kulai. Everyone says, Neder Shuta Mektasa Huta Kulai. So isn't this Brisa, which is seemingly referring to a situation of changed wording, and still saying that it's only Rabbi Kiva that says, Neder Shuta Mektasa Huta Kulai, Akashan Rava? So according to Rava, if the wording was changed, everybody says, Neder Shuta Mektasa Huta Kulai. So Tosfos makes a very interesting observation. He says, the Gemara, this Gemara and the previous Gemara we learned, make assumptions. And based on the assumptions, the Gemara asks kashas. In the previous Gemara, the Gemara assumed that his wording didn't change. And that's why he asked the kasha on Rava. In this Gemara, the Gemara assumes that his wording was changed. And again, he has a kasha on Rava. Why make these assumptions? Make an assumption in the previous Gemara that the wording was changed and you won't have a kasha on Rava. Make an assumption in this Gemara that the wording wasn't changed, which is actually going to be the Gemara's teretz in a minute, and then there's no kasha on Rava. Why always make assumptions that lead you to questions? So the Rishonim answer, because the wording of the neder points in the direction of that assumption. In the previous Gemara, the person said all onions are asur. He said all onions. And therefore, it makes sense to say that when he wanted to say kufri should be mutter, he would have continued saying all onions except for kufri. In this Gemara, the person didn't mean everything. Why didn't he mean everything? Because he wasn't talking about the basket. He's speaking about the basket, but the basket's not the issue. It's the produce in the basket. So it makes sense to say that he started off with a situation that he's speaking about all. They're starting off with a situation that he spoke about everything in the basket, and then he changed to say that I'm speaking about the specifics. So why does the Brisa say it only represents the opinion of Rabbi Kiva? Answers the Gemara. Loi. The Brisa is referring to a situation where he didn't change his terminology. Had I been aware that the B'nai Suach fruit is in this basket, everything in the basket is prohibited. He wouldn't have changed his wording. And if he wouldn't have changed his wording, it's only Rabbi Kiva who holds, according to Rava, and that's why the Brisa says it's only Rabbi Kiva that would have been lenient. Says the Gemara, Man Tana Lahada Tana Rabbanan. Who's the Tana of the following Brisa? The Brisa says, if a person made a nether at one time that he's not going to have benefit from five individuals, the halach is hutu lechemhen, hutu kulan. If he becomes mutter to one of these individuals, we apply the concept of neder shuta mektasai hutu kulai, and he can benefit from all of them. On the other hand, if he said chutz miyechemhen, then the halach is hum mutter vehein asurim. Only for that one individual who he now had an annulment, an exclusion, With him, he'll be able to have benefit. Everyone else, not. This Gemara is a beautiful summary and chazara to what we've been learning. Ila Rabba, according to Rabba, going back to the beginning of our shir, who has the stricter interpretation of Nedashut Mekzas Otukulay, the Reisha, where is referring to a situation where he changed his wording, and it represents only the opinion of Rabbi Kiva. So according to Rabbi Kiva, we say Nedashut Mekzas Otukulay, everyone else will disagree. The Sefer, he didn't change his wording, and since he didn't change his wording, no one will say that we applied Nedashot Mekzas Otukulay. The Rehakol, and only the person I excluded, I annulled, no one else. According to Rava, Sefer, the Sefer represents the opinion of the Rabbanim, because the Sefer is referring, according to Rava, to a situation where I didn't change my wording. Since I didn't change my wording, Rava says, only Rabbi Kiva says Nedashot Mekzas Otukulay. Rabbanim don't hold Nedashot Mekzas Otukulay, and that's why the Rabbanim will not apply that concept. The Reisha is referring to a situation where he changed his wording, and everybody, Divrei Hakel, holds that when the wording was changed, we say Nedashot Mekzas Otukulay. Just to wrap up the sugya, the Ran says, what's the halacha? So he says, even though we've had a machloikis, if we hold of the concept of Nedashot Mekzas Otukulay, we do hold of that concept, l'halacha, of Nedashot Mekzas Otukulay. But as we've been learning in today's shir and to previous shir, we have a machloikis Rabba and Rava. Do we have a... Rava has a more lenient interpretation. Rava has a strict interpretation. Which is the interpretation we follow l'halacha? Because there's a real dilemma here, says the Ran. On one hand, Rava was the later Amora. And throughout Shas, we have a rule, Hilchas HaKabasro. We always follow the latter opinion. On the other hand, Rabba was Rava's Rebbe. So it's hard to follow Rava's opinion when he's going against his own Rebbe, Rabba. So what do we do here? So the Ran says, since it's a Shaila, we should be Machmer with a more stricter interpretation of the concept of Nedashot Mekzas Otukulay. The Ran also quotes, just we've discussed some of these points, so I'm just going to mention them quickly. The Ran also says that there's a machloikis Ramban in Tosfos, that the Ramban says that if a neder is a nidre shkogis, or a neder was annulled through a Pesach, that's when we apply the concept of neder shutim k'tos otukulay. But if a neder was annulled because of charata, we don't apply the concept of neder shutim k'tos otukulay. The Ran quotes Tosfos, who disagrees, and says that even in a situation where a neder was annulled because of charata, we also say neder shutim k'tos otukulay. And then the Ran says that if a neder was annulled, not by a chacham, but it was annulled by a father or a husband, who we have learned and will spend more time learning in Mitzvah Hashem, under certain circumstances and certain conditions, a father or a husband can annul a neder, mefer a neder, it's not really annul, mefer is the right word, not matter. If a husband or a father only are mefer, part of the neder, not all of the neder, we do not apply the concept of neder shotu mektasei hutakula. Says the Mishnah, Nidrei Einsim. We begin now with a new situation. The Mishnah, we go back to the beginning of our perek, quoted four types of Nidorim that are not considered halachic valid Nidorim. And then the last example was Nidrei Einsim. Einsim means that there was something beyond my control that prevented me from being able to make the neder. The Rishonim have a machloikis, why a Nidrei Einsim are not considered a valid neder. I saw three pshatim. One pshat is that Nidrei Einsim is not a neder because the pasuk says, L'chol ashi yevata ha'odom v'shvua. So the odom, the person had to be clear in what he said. If some circumstance came up beyond his control, that's not considered a neder that I'm obligated to follow. Another pshat is that there's a rule throughout Shas, and we're going to discuss the rule actually more in the Shia today. Einus Rachmana Patre. If somebody's an Einus, he's Potter. So here too, Einus Rachmana Patre. Einus doesn't have to keep his nether. Another pshat that I saw is that when somebody makes a nether, it's obvious to anyone that when I made the neder, I meant if I could, if everything goes well, and I could fulfill my neder. It's obvious to anyone hearing me make the neder that I didn't intend to make the neder if I couldn't have kept it. And that's why it's not considered a neder I'm obligated to keep. Very interesting, machloikus rishonim. What will be the halacha? I made a neder, and if I wanted to fulfill it, I could fulfill it. But when I made the neder, I made the neder with the understanding that it wouldn't cost me anything to fulfill the neder. The example I use is, let's say I live across the street from a shul. I say, I'm going to get up tomorrow morning to learn in the shul, and I make a neder. Then, for whatever reason, I have to be somewhere else tonight. So I could come to shul tomorrow morning, but now it's going to cost me money. I have to get a car to get to shul. Is that considered an oinus or not? So the machlokes rishonim, some rishonim say that's not considered an oinus. Other rishonim say that it is considered oinus. Another opinion that the Taz says, very obvious opinion, the Taz says we have to really see the circumstances under which I made the nether. If I made the nether, and it's obvious to all that I made the nether without expecting to spend money, and then it ends up that to fulfill the nether I have to spend money, then it's a nether einsin. If it's not that obvious that the nether was based on it not costing me money, then it would be a nether I have to fulfill. The Gra has a very interesting approach. The Gra's approach is that it depends on my financial circumstances. If I'm a wealthy person, Baruch Hashem, so there, taking out a few dollars to go is not really a hardship. So you can't say it's a nidre einsin because I expected not to spend money and now it costs me money. On the other hand, a person with more limited resources, that for him to fulfill the nether, he can't afford to fulfill the nether, it will be considered a nidre einsin. I also was thinking along the same lines of the Gra, it could also make a difference how much money is involved. If it's a small amount of money, no big deal. If it's an expensive proposition, it may be more of a nidre einsin. So the Mishnah tells us nidre einsin. And it's important, as we learn the Mishnah, to remember the Gemara that we learned on Daf Chaf Talad Amar Aleph. The example of the Mishnah is, Hidira Chavera Shiyach Letzlai. My friend and aunt made me make a nether that I should eat by him. And as we learned on Daf Chaf Talad, it's not a nidre's reason. Because as we learned, one of the examples of nidre's reason is that I want you to eat by me, and the way I get you motivated is by making a nether. The Gemara says, our Mishnah is not referring to nidre's reason. Our Mishnah is referring to the way most Rishonim explain the Gemara, is that I invited you to eat by me. You want to make sure, and there's two ways the Rishonim take this. You want to make sure that this invitation is going to happen. So that I don't back out, or that you don't back out. Those are the two perspectives of the Rishonim. So you, the person who I invited, make me make a nether that if you don't come, you'll be usher to have any benefit from me. So I, the inviter, wasn't the one that initiated the nether. For it to be a nidre's reason, it would have to be me, the inviter, initiating the nether. It was you, the person who was invited, that initiated the nether. So it's not a nidre's reason. So Hidira Chaver Shoich Etzloi, I make this nether. And then v'cholahu, the person I invited got sick. Oy shechol benoy, his son got sick, which prevented him from coming. Oy shik v'noyer, there was a flood that prevented him from coming. Harei lo nidre einsin. And as the Rishonim, as the Muki Yosef explains, the way to understand our Mishnah is the Mishnah is going from a smaller chiddush to a bigger chiddush. Certainly, if the person who invited got sick, so he has a good excuse. He's sick. If his son got sick, it's not as much of an excuse. He could still have come, but we could understand that a father wants to be with a son who's sick. And as the Mefarshim say, the same din would apply if his wife got sick. In fact, many Mefarshim say it certainly applies if his wife got sick, because ishta kegufay, so his husband has to take care of his wife if his wife gets sick. The last case is Baruch Hashem, no one's sick. It's only a flood. So you could have maybe tried to come. Teaches us in the Mishnah that all these cases are considered nidre einsim, and you don't have to fulfill the nether. Says the Gemara, who gavid atvasa zachs v'beidina? And there are two ways the Rishonim explain this Gemara. There was someone involved in a litigation, and he comes to Bezdin, and he tells Bezdin, I have proof that I'm in the right. He has some proof, which he gives to Bezdin. It's not adequate for him to win the case. So he tells Bezdin, I'm going to bring adequate evidence within 30 days. And again, the two ways the Rishonim learn is either the person volunteered that he's going to bring evidence within 30 days, or that the Bezdin told him, we don't really believe you that you have any evidence. We think you're just stalling. And they give him a 30-day time limit. And they tell him, Eli sin at los in yamim, if you don't bring the additional evidence within 30 days, levat l'chayin is chosay, even the documentation you gave us, your case is lost. And then, isnes v'loy asa, because of an oinus, he couldn't come and bring his additional evidence. Om Rav Huna, batl s'chafsay. So Rav Huna says, he loses the case, even though there was an oinus. Om le Rava, so Rava says to Rav Huna, honest who? The person's an oinus. If something happened beyond his control. And we have a rule throughout Shas, v'oinus rachmana patri, somebody who's an oinus, the Torah doesn't have a problem with. The ksif, what's the proof? We know, chas v'sholem, if a woman has an adulterous affair, so she is chayiv a very serious oinish, eishes ish. What will happen if a woman was violated? So the pasuk says lanar lo yisas adava. She's innocent. So we see oinish rachmana patri. Ask the achroinim. Very obvious question. If a girl rachmana litzlan was violated, so she didn't do anything wrong, so of course she shouldn't be held responsible. But this person, she didn't do anything of error, she was never violated. Of this person, whoever was supposed to show up, so there was an oinus. But you can't say that he didn't do anything that he was supposed to do. He didn't come, and he was supposed to come. So how could the Gemara compare the two situations? So the Chasam Sofer says, and it's a little hard to understand the Chasam Sofer, I'm just repeating what the Chasam Sofer says, that not in every case that a woman is violated is she so innocent. Let's say she provoked the person who violated her. She went to a place where she could have known that this may happen. So you can't really call her that innocent. Still, the Torah says she's innocent. So we see that it's not even that we can apply the case of oinus where it's not a pure oinus. Rav Chaim Brisker has a much deeper pshat. Rav Chaim says this. Rav Chonin says this. They have a much deeper pshat. They say pshats like this. What does oinus rachmana patri tell us? The oinus rachmana patri means that even if somebody did something, but if it's or didn't do something, makes no difference. Oinus rachmana patri says we don't view it as if it happened or didn't happen. Oinus rachmana patri says that when a woman was violated, the halacha says it never happened. Here too, when the person didn't show up, if he didn't show up because of oinus, the halacha views it as if that he did come or that nothing happened. That he didn't come. And therefore, what, says Rava, he should not be held liable. V'chi teima, says the Gemara. So the question is, Rava's asking Rav Huna, so how could you hold him liable, make him lose the case? V'chi teima, if you'll say, k'ton l'shani. There it's a question that the woman had this relationship. So what is the question on the table? The question on the table is, should we give her a punishment or not? So as the Rishonim explain, throughout Shas, we find a concept of a Yitziloi Ha'eda, that we're very reluctant to give a person a punishment. The person really had to do an Aveira to get a punishment. So to say that this woman who was violated did something wrong, that she should get a punishment, makes no sense. But that has nothing to do with this case, where the person made a deal that he's going to bring his evidence, and if he didn't, it shouldn't make a difference, perhaps, if he didn't bring his evidence, he loses the case. Ask the Gemara, but there's another kasha. Our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is not talking about matters of oinish. What does our Mishnah say? Nidri oinsin. If a person made a neder, and there was an oinus that prevented him from fulfilling his neder, hedira chaveri shiyachal etzloi, v'cholahu, o'shichol v'noi, o'shik v'no, harele nidri oinsin. So we see that it's not a question of punishment, and yet we apply the concept of oinus. So that's a question that Rava asks in Rav Huna. It's interesting to note that the Gemara doesn't answer this doesn't bring down how Rav Huna would have answered this question. Rava is posing a question to Rav Huna. that from our Mishnah we see that we apply the concept of onus very broadly. And Rav Huna doesn't. So how come you don't apply it in the case of the person who left the evidence with Beis Din? Rav Huna doesn't respond. What would have been Rav Huna's response? So I saw the Rishonim give a number of possible responses that Rav Huna could give. One is that Nedarim are different than everything else in Halacha. Because by Nedarim we've been learning a concept. We have to have lived pivotally by Shavim. When a person makes a nether, we know what his intent was. And we know that the person only meant to make a nether, as we said earlier, if everything goes as expected. If it doesn't go as expected, he never meant to make a nether. But that has nothing to, that's a unique concept in Hilchos Nedarim. Can't be applied in other areas of Halacha. Another example, another answer that Rishonim give, goes back to something we spoke about. In the case of our Mishnah, I, the inviter who made the nether, didn't initiate the nether. You asked me to make a nether. You, the invitee, asked me to make a nether to make sure you come. So obviously, when you asked me to make a nether, you asked me to make a nether if you could come under normal circumstances. In this case, I came to Beis Din, it goes according to this pshat, and made an offer to Beis Din that if I don't bring evidence within 30 days, I lose. And I didn't say anything more than that. Why did you make this offer? It must be that you were prepared to stand behind this offer no matter what. And therefore, even if it was an onus that prevented you from fulfilling your offer, makes no difference, says Rav Huna, you lose your case. Ask the Gemara, but Rava says, we do apply the concept of onus broadly. Ask the Gemara, LeRava, Maishna Mara Tanan. There's a Gemara, Masechta Gittin. And also in the beginning of Masechta Ksubis. That's where we learned it. Somebody says to his wife, and it's important to put this into context. We have a couple who's married, unfortunately have no children. And the husband is concerned on his wife's behalf that if something should happen to him and his wife becomes almana, she'll have to have yibum or chalitza. And he wants to prevent that from happening to his wife. So he's traveling overseas. And specifically in those times, traveling overseas was somewhat dangerous, and he wasn't sure he's going to come back. So he says to his wife, "Harei ze gittich me'achshav." He gives his wife a get with the condition, "Im lo basim mekan ad yud beis chodesh." If I don't come back within 12 months, the get should be effective. "Umeis betach yud beis chodesh." Before the 12 months are up, he dies. So the halach is, "Harei ze get." The get is considered a good get. Question is, if Rava applies the concept of onus, you can have a bigger onus than dying. Nobody is expecting to die. Nobody certainly wants to die. For mitnas onus, answers the Gemara, you can't ask from there. And let's think it through. Beautiful. What is this person's goal? His goal is to make his wife a grusha rather than being almana, because if she's a grusha, she doesn't have a problem with even chalitza. If he would have known that he's going to die, he certainly would want to get to be effective, to avoid his wife being an amana. That's why there we don't apply the concept of onus. Amri, Dilmashani Hassam. There it's a unique situation. If this person was aware that he's going to pass away, have a gum of Yavagit, he certainly would have wanted to get a get to avoid her being a grusha. Says the Gemara, Maishna Mahuda Amalahu. But we learned another Gemara, also in the beginning of Masechta Ksuvos. Somebody made the following condition with his wife. If I don't come, he gives his wife a get, and he says, if I don't come within 30 days, lahav a getta. This get should be effective, and we're divorced. Also, it's day 30, he's coming, opas gemabra, and there's a river that overflowed that prevented him from reaching his wife. Amalu, and he's standing on the other side of the river, and he's calling, Chazuda soy, Chazuda soy, I'm here, just the river's in my way. Doesn't count. He didn't actually physically come, and it's considered a get. Amai, but why is it a get? If Rava applies the concept of oinus in this very broad fashion, that we say oinus all over, he's an oinus, the river overflowed. Amai. So why are we saying that the get's not a get? Why are we saying that the get's a get? Answers the Gemara, Dilma unsa de migla shani, umabra migla unsa. Says the Gemara. There are different types of einsim. There are certain times that einis is something totally unexpected happens. And then there are certain einsim that are to be expected. The case of the Gemara Masech the Gittin was such a case. Yes, there was a river overflow that prevented me, that prevented the man from getting there. But that river overflowed all the time. So why, when he made the condition, didn't he add that point? That if there's a overflow, then the get's not a get. Means that he meant that the get should be a get under all circumstances. In our Gemara, however, in our Mishnah, what happened, ikfainor, that's what all Rishonim explain, it was something totally unexpected. And since it was totally unexpected, that's why it's considered an oinus. So Kivega says a very bechidish. He says, in this case that the Gemara just explained, where there was an oinus to be expected, and therefore the person can't claim he's an oinus, because if you should have made preparations and should have been aware and said that something that is expected to happen will happen, then the whole deal is off. So that's not an oinus. Says Rabbi Kivega, once the person didn't speak about an oinus that should be expected, even if an oinus that shouldn't have been expected happened, he can't claim that this is an oinus because this was unexpected. Because obviously you're a person that meant what you said under all circumstances. Because if you didn't mean it under all circumstances, why don't you say that if an oinus to be expected happens, I don't mean it. So Rabbi Kivega says a chiddush that even in this case an unexpected oinus would not be considered oinus. The Gemara actually, and Masech the Gittin gives a different teretz to this. Kasha. The Gemara Masech the Ksubas quoted that Gemara. The Gemara says that actually this may be considered a case of oinus, but Chazal had a special reason why not to apply the halacha of oinus here. Mishim tznuas or mishim prutzas. Tznuas are women who are very virtuous. And there's going to be a case where the person really didn't show up. There was no oinus. But this woman, being that she's so frum, is going to be concerned maybe there was an oinus. And she'll never get remarried. She'll remain in a guna, always being concerned that a get wasn't a good get. Or you could have just the opposite. You could have prutzes. Well, really, what is an oinus? And the get's not a get. But she doesn't really care, and she said a get was a get. So to prevent such situations, Chazal said, ein oinus begitten. You can never claim oinus begitten. So the Gerushonim say that that's a teretz the Gemara could have given. Obviously, Rava didn't hold of this broad concept of oinus begitten, and therefore the Gemara didn't say that teretz here, as it does in Masechta Ksubos Masechta Gittin. There's another beautiful vart here from Reb Baruch Tam, very chavivus to this vart, anical from Reb Baruch Tam. He says like this: there's a famous machloikus, Nemuke Yosef and Aguda, very relevant la'aloch l'maisa. He says as follows. Let's say a person gave himself time to do something. And I'll soon show you where it's very relevant, la'aloch l'maisa. And he could have done it, no problem. But as people are, they procrastinate. And then, when the deadline approached, then he was an oinus. Is that considered an oinus or not? Where is this relevant, la'aloch l'maisa, this machlokes? Let's say the zman tefillah is 10 o'clock. A person gets up at 7 o'clock. He could have davened 7 o'clock. He could have davened 8 o'clock. He could have davened 9 o'clock. The halacha we all know is that if somebody misses a tefillah because he was a shaygig or oinus, he can make it up by the next tefillah. If he misses a tefillah b'mezit, there's no makeup. So here we have this individual got up at 7 in the morning. He could have davened 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. But he procrastinated. At 9:30, which is the last time he could daven, then he became an oinus, that something prevented him from davening. Is he considered an oinus or not? He had 3 hours before that he could have davened. The Nemuke Yosef calls him an oinus. It makes no difference. The Aguda says you can't call such a person an oinus. Who told you to wait for the last minute? You had all this time before to daven. Now you say you're an oinus? He's not an oinus. Asra Baruch Tam, according to the Aguda, that if you wait for the last day, you're not considered an oinus. So why didn't the Gemara give a simple teretz? This person with the get told his wife that if I don't come within 30 days, then the get's a get. You know why he's not an oinus? Because why did you wait for the 30th day? You could have come for the first 29, when there was no flood. You waited for the last day, and then there was a flood? That's not an oinus. Why didn't the Gemara give that teretz, according to the Aguda? Says Reb Baruch Tam, a very nice Teretz. He says as follows. He says, when do we have the machloikas of the Aguda and the Namuki Yosef? By something one is obligated to do. I'm choyif to daven. I'm obligated to daven. So if I could have davened at 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, and I procrastinated till the last minute, that's something that the Aguda says you can't call yourself an oinus. One isn't obligated to come give his wife a get or not give his wife a get. It's totally voluntary. There, even the Aguda will agree that if you waited for the last minute, won't mean that you're not an oinus. He'll agree that's considered an oinus, because it's not something you're obligated to do. And that's why the Gemara couldn't have given that teretz. In Halacha, we find many times in Halacha, a situation known as an asmachta. An asmachta is a situation where I said I'm going to do something, but I really never meant that I would have to do it. The example I always give when we learn the Gemara of an asmachta is very relevant in the world of builders, in the world of construction. People enter a contract with a construction company that they're going to have the project done by a certain day. And the contractor says if it's not done by a certain day, then he'll pay a penalty or whatever. And it's not done. That's called an asmachta. Why is an asmachta? There are two approaches. It's really the same. He really never intended to do it, to pay it, because he never thought that he'll overrun the deadline. And therefore, he just said it, but he didn't mean it. Or he only did it because he wanted to make his client happy. His client is anxious to have the project done. So he just did it to make his client happy, but not that he ever really intended to do it. Ask the Gemara. Ulraf Huna. Michti asmachtihi. Let's go back to our case. The case was where I'm a litigant in a case, and I tell Beis Din, I'm going to have the documentation within 30 days, and if not, I'm prepared to lose the case. I never really meant it. I meant I was sure I'm going to have the documentation. So that should be an asmachta. And the halacha is, v'asmachta loikanya. So there's a machlokes rishonim, when the Gemara here says, asmachta loikanya, that asmachta is really not considered a valid kinyan, is that midorais or midrabonim? Some rishonim say that it's only midrabonim. And they have a very nice raya. We actually find an asmachta in the Torah. Yehuda tells Yaakov, I'm certainly going to have Binyamin returned. And if not, I will be punished in this world and the next world. Yehuda certainly didn't mean it. He certainly had every intention of returning Binyamin, but yet we see that the Torah considers Yehuda's guarantee a real guarantee. So it's a right that an asmachta is a kinyan. It's only midrabanan that Chazal said asmachta like kinyan. Other Rishonim, that's the opinion of the Mordechai. Other Rishonim say that asmachta kinyan. That's not like kanya midaraisa. Why? Because a concept that we've discussed many times. The pasuk regarding the darim says ish kiyafli, and as we've explained, what is the Torah saying? That when a person undertakes the darim, it has to be that he really meant it. And if he didn't really mean it, it's not a neder, it's not a naziris. So we see that only time something is really considered an obligation is when you really, really meant to assume the obligation. And if there wasn't that real gemiras das, if there wasn't that real obligation, it's not considered a real obligation. So the Mefarshim asks a very obvious question. If we're saying that if somebody said something and he really didn't think he would ever come to that point, it's not considered something that he meant, so how could we ever have a Tanai? We go back to Tanai B'nai Gad B'nai Ruvain, that they told Moshe Rabbeinu that if we don't do our share in conquering Eretz Yisrael, we won't get our share on the other side. Why? They didn't really mean it. They wanted their share no matter what. So it shouldn't have been an asmachta. So I saw the many terutzim to that kasha. There's really not enough time to say all the terutzim. So I'll say a few terutzim. One terutz is, there's a difference with an asmachta that I enter because someone else initiated it versus where I initiated. There, Moshe Rabbeinu, who was making a deal. So if you make a deal with two people that they initiated, you have to follow. This, when I make the asmachta loikanya. Another teretz, this is, I think, the most sensible teretz, if I may say so. It really depends on the circumstances. Sometimes it's obvious that's an asmachta. Our Gemara, for example. When a person says to Beis Din, I'm willing to lose the case. because if I don't bring the documentation, nobody's willing to lose the case. He never really meant it. And that's why it's an asmachta. The Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven really meant what they said. And it was a reasonable deal. You'll get your share, but you have to do your share in conquering Eretz Yisrael. There it's not an asmachta. There are other truths for another time. So, ask the Gemara, isn't this situation where the person told Beis Din that if I don't bring my documentation within 30 days, a case of an asmachta, and therefore, even if he doesn't come, why does he lose? Asmachta lekanya. Answer is the Gemara, Shani hacha de mitzvah sin schusin. Here it's different because he actually left documentation by Beis Din. So that gives it more of a seriousness, and it's not just considered an asmachta, because he actually left documentation with Beis Din. Ask the Gemara, v'heicha de mitzvah sin lav asmachta hi, does it make a difference if Beis Din is holding, or the other side is holding documentation or not? For Tanan, the Mishnah says, in the Masechta Bava Basra, we have the following case. We have a malva and a loiva. Let's say the loiva owes the malva $1,000. Doesn't really have the funds, but he has $500. So he gives the malva $500. Typically, what happens, if I'm a loiva and you're a malva, you, the malva, hold on to the shtar until I pay you up. Here, we're sort of, I gave you $500. So the right thing, as the Gemara in Bava Basra says to do, is that you should continue holding on to the shtar. The malva should continue holding on to the shtar, and she writes the receipt that I gave him $500 already. But the Gemara discusses, they try to avoid writing receipts. So they came up with another plan. Mi shapara mitzvah chayva, I paid up part of the obligation, vishus shtara. So we say that the shtar shouldn't remain with the malva, because the shtar says, I owe you $1,000. I don't owe you $1,000 anymore. I only owe you $500. If I don't pay up the balance, the other $500 that I owe, within 30 days, we tell this third party, give back the malva, the whole shtar. So the halacha is, he gives malva loy nosin. In 30 days, come, and I don't pay up. The deal's a deal. It has to go back to the malva, and now the malva will be able to collect the whole $1,000. And the Rishonim explained, because what I meant to say was that if I don't pay up within 30 days, the $500 that I gave should be viewed as a gift, and I still owe the whole obligation of $1,000. Rav Yehuda Amar Lo Yitein. Rav Yehuda says, no, you don't give him back. What's the machlokes based on? According to Rav Yosi, we give back the shtar, because we say the deal's a deal. Rav Yehuda says we don't give back the shtar, because I really never meant it. I was sure I'm going to pay up the balance. So we see that even when there's a document in question, we still consider the situation an asmachta. So what is Al Gemara saying? That because I left the shtar by Beis Din, it's not a situation of an asmachta. Here we see that even when I left the shtar by the third party, we still say it's a situation of an asmachta. Answers the Gemara, Shani hachad amal levatlan schusei. Here I went a step further. I didn't just leave over the shtar. I specifically proclaimed that I'm prepared to lose. And therefore, it's not just a situation of asmachta. Says the Gemara, hilchasa asmachta kanya. And asmachta is considered a kinyan with a certain stipulation. Number one is v'hu d'loy onis, that there was not, something didn't come up beyond my control. Going back to our Gemara, even if I left the shtaris with Beis Din and said I'm prepared to lose, but if something beyond my control came up, then I'm not obligated. It also has to be the konamine, that there was a real kinyan, and it also has to be done the Beis Din choshev. Machlokes Rishonim what a Beis Din choshev means. Some say Beis Din choshev means a Beis Din that has smicha, the members of Beis Din have smicha. Others say a Beis Din choshev means that it's just a prominent Beis Din that knows the halacha. The Rishonim discussed that if there's a kinyan, why do I need a Beis Din choshev? So there's a number of terutzim, and the two terutzim that I'm going to repeat. The Ran says a teretz that in a non-Beis Din choshev, I have to say me'achshev. In a Beis Din choshev, I don't have to say the word me'achshev. Another teretz is that in a non-Beis Din choshev, it's I give something. Here, it's not that I'm giving something. I'm just walking away from a right. Walking away from a right is a much more complicated transaction, and that's why a Beis Din choshev is required.